Hello and welcome to the Illuminated Podcast, The 12 Months of I. This month we're delving into the theme of imagination with our extraordinary guest, Beth English. Beth's journey from trauma survivor to celebrated artist and empowering speaker is a testament to the transformative power of creativity. Through her art and leadership, she inspires the joy of creativity in communities worldwide, inviting others to discover the joy of creation in their own lives. Beth has worked with Bridgestone Americas, Salesforce, Facebook Community Leadership Circles, Meeting Professionals International, and many more, unleashing the joy of creativity to drive outstanding results. Join us as we explore the power of imagination and learn how to unleash creativity in your life and community. Please welcome Beth English to the show. Yay!
Yay! Yeah, hi, Debbie.
Hi, Beth. So, some of you who don't know me may not know that I like to bring people on my show that have inspired me and have really brought me to a place where they have been able to open up my world. And Beth is one of those people that I met in Nashville, where we're located, on a Meeting Professionals International Tennessee Chapter board, and loved her so much, I made her come to Knoxville with me, where the idea of the 12 months of I and where this podcast came from. So Beth is a very special guest today.
Thank you. I just love you so much, Debbie.
There's just something about the conversations that we had on the drive while we were there, spending time together. We hardly knew each other, spent a hotel room together, a conference, a drive home. But one thing that is always, what you always are, is true to yourself. And also watching you do your keynote and breakouts has been very inspiring. And I want to give you the time to tell people your story and how creativity has played such a role in your story.
Wow. Well, first off, I just want to touch on what you just said about not knowing each other very well. I knew I liked you when we went on the very first board retreat to Birmingham. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to hang out with this lady because she's smart. So when you were like, will you come with us to me? I was like, of course I will. Road trips are the best. And it is how you can bond so quickly. So I'm grateful for that as well. But creativity has been a major part of my story. And, you know, when I look back, I can see how using my creative gifts, even as a young child, have helped me. So it's not that I just discovered this in my adult life. It's something that inherently I've always known. I just didn't maybe know the science around it, or how to articulate it, or how to put a graph up on a presentation about it like I do now. But creativity, I think if we can all reflect on how using our authentic voice to ask for what we need and create solutions to reach our goals or to have particular outcomes, how that has been transformative in each of us. And I know that we can find these stories in our own lives about it. We just maybe not looking in the right place, because when we think of creativity, we think of how, you know, kindergartners make finger paints, and that is just not the whole picture. And so part of my mission is to show people how they are all creative, how we all have this gift inside of us to problem solve, to create positive change and impact in our lives and our communities by starting with our imagination, which we're talking about today. So I have been using my imagination my whole life to create environments for myself that feel safe, that feel open, that feel connected, because I didn't have that growing up. And so I would have to create that for myself. And so I lived in my own little fantasy world as a kid, and I'd play piano or color or sew. I'd did all sorts of different expressive arts type disciplines. And it always made me feel better. And so that has not been lost on me as an adult, even though I focus on creative disciplines that I didn't used to as a kid. It's just something that has evolved over time as a painter, as a writer, as a speaker. These are all creative, expressive arts that I love to approach as an artist. So my perspective, my lens is always through an artistic lens. How do we do this with the most impact and creativity and connection? How are we impacting the audience? That's always what the art is about, is the story the audience is experiencing for themselves. And for me as a painter, the story of the work became so important that it went beyond just the paint and the canvas. It leaked into my speaking and how I want to engage with people and the conversations I want to have with them. So I had to remove myself from just standing in the back of a gallery, watching people look at art, into connecting with them one-on-one or in groups about the power of our own creative minds. And so that is what I love doing. And I am never going to stop. As you know, Debbie, I build community and I bring people together and I encourage these types of thinking and everyone that I work with. And I can't help it, because life is better when we're thinking creatively.
Well, you just said a lot that brought a lot to my mind. And one of them was that a lot of people may not know is when you talked about your art and moving, you didn't just paint on canvases. Explain to people your moving art and how that really opened you up to this creative community where we live in Nashville.
Well, first, of course, I never have been professionally trained as an artist. I have just been interested in a lot of different things and taken the initiative to start, even when I didn't know what I was doing. But I started painting on canvas, and then I started painting murals, and then my work eventually made its way onto a city bus that went all over Nashville, and it was called the Joy Bus, and the intention was for riders to experience joy and think about joy in their lives on the bus. So the art decorated the outside and the inside of the bus, but inside, we use the writer's own words of what brought them joy in their life, and we would print it out on a label maker and stick these sentences and little stickers all over the inside of the bus, so that no matter where you sat, you would have some visible line of sight of a motivational message or something that might trigger you thinking about joy. And so it was more of an interactive approach to joy, and we used a bus to create that space for people.
That is that was really cool when I saw your keynote and, you know, you explaining your art. And I know that you have so many facets to your creativity. One of them, you're a musician, you're a singer, songwriter, you just have a lot of creative outlets with paint. I also know that you love to dance. You are a trained dancer, I believe, and you just have these very expressive ways. And how is it, you know, when you become an adult, why do you think we lose that joy of our imagination and creativity? Like, what happens?
I think that we are given a certain path, like our teachers and our parents, people around us who are adults, they instill a certain type of vision that we need to follow. And we listen because we're kids and we're trying to grow up, maybe do things, you know, the way that others have done it before us, right? So we get higher education or we go to work and then we stay in that job, or maybe we get a different job. I mean, there is a clear path to taking care of yourself as an adult in a way that it should look. Full-time employment, am I right? Health insurance, all the things. And if you don't have those things, then maybe you're not doing so well. And that, I think, is that can be the death of our creativity, because life is full of endless possibilities. You don't have to do anything the way other people have done it before you. You can forge your own path. You can create something new. You can bypass a lot of the stuff that has already happened before, or ways of doing things before, and try to create something new. But adults are not encouraged to lean into that childlike, playful self that we all have within us, because what's more important than that? Making money, getting ahead, succeeding, all the stuff that is burning people out and causing them to take a pause and ask themselves, is this what I really want? Is this who I really want to be? Something's got to be better than this, because at the end of the day, a lot of people still are not happy. Even if they are successful in their careers, making lots of money, have the husband, have the family and the kids, they're still not happy. And it's because there's a neglected part of ourselves that still needs us to give it a voice. And that is that light within us that expresses the things that we think are beautiful and important and valuable and worth paying attention to. And if we do not let that voice come out, then part of us will be less, we'll feel that we are not truly connected to who we were meant to be on this earth.
I know you work with a lot of groups, your breakouts, and you use a lot of meditative rest, relaxation, restorative practices. Your voice is soothing. It is something that I cannot do. I'm like powerhouse, blah, you know, like that is me. You have a soothing tone to you. When you do speak to people, especially in smaller groups and maybe not your keynote in front of others, how do you get people to really tap into that joy? Now, I've been to a breakout of yours before and came out like, wow, I want more. What are some practices people can take home with them that they can do themselves to bring them that imagination, creativity, and joy?
Oh my gosh. I love working with these groups. I'm just thinking about all the ones I've done this year. And, you know, specifically to answer your first question, how do I get people to connect to these things, to open up, to feel like that they're part of something that they can be expressive in that environment? I would say making people feel safe. I definitely, at the beginning, ask them to trust me. So we are in agreement that together we're going to go through an experience that I, number one, am mindful of how they feel and their safety and security, and two, to let them know that they can trust me. And that, so before we even get into anything, we have an agreement together. And I think that can be a really powerful way to start any kind of group interaction, because we know what the ground rules are. That we're going to be safe and we're going to build trust, period. And then from there, I love to just hold space and notice when people maybe want to say something and they're holding back. I may encourage them to share. Like, I can just read body language in people's faces and try to encourage them to open up. And if maybe they're not quite ready, maybe someone else is, and then they'll be inspired by that, and then they'll come back and open up and share. But a lot of the restorative and mindful practices I teach are because when our brains are overactive, when we're ruminating on thought or thinking, worrying, it shuts down the part of our brain that can be creative. And so with restorative practices like meditative breathing, mindfulness, visualization, those types of exercises, they slow down our prefrontal cortex in our brain so that the activity slows down, so that we're more open to the unfamiliar and creating connections. I think if we create openness, we can allow for thoughts to come in and for connections to come in. If we are shut down and we think we know how something's going to go or a certain way, or we're just limiting ourselves. So how do we create a limitless mindset with the groups that we're building teams with and that we are collaborating with? that to me is what makes companies successful and people feel the benefits from that type of leadership and that type of environment, because then they're buying in with their heart and their soul, not just their presence. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it very much reminds me of improv. I used to do improv and just being in those situations where you do not know what's going to come next and you just have to trust your partners and you have to go with it. And I think that we forget sometimes that like life isn't scripted. We don't know where things are going and we have to trust the ones around us as a group. And that's why it's important in these group situations with creativity and imagination to kind of think outside the box and have fun with it and find the joy. And I think that sometimes we forget that, you know, yeah, making money is important and going to work is important, but if you do not find the joy in it, then you shouldn't be doing it at all. And that should come with every part of your life. If something is not joyful, take a step back and, you know, look at what it, like why, or do some exercises. And there, it's the science of the brain. I mean, like you were just talking about the prefrontal cortex and all that. It's like when you have fear, you are shutting off. You cannot have both at the same time. And in order to tap into that joy or whatever emotion you want on the, you know, the happy scale, I like to call them the happy scale, but you know, a love-based emotion, you have to train that sometimes, especially in our world, which brings me to the question of, you know, when I was a kid, I had an imagination, you know, kind of an imaginary friend. It was I had a rock, I had a pet rock. I didn't have a lot of friends. I was weird. I was smallest person, you know, and I was like, I needed someone. So I had a pet rock in a sense. Do you think sometimes it's important to just even have that imaginary friend if we need to talk to someone and just get it off your chest instead of a lot of people hold it in? And just even being that imaginative person without kind of feeling crazy?
I think people are always going to try to make us feel different and crazy because bullying is so rampant. So sometimes we go into shame and judgment way too quickly because that's just what we're used to. That's what we hear all the time. I mean, if you have an imaginary friend and you talk to someone and then someone tells, you know, cuts you down for that, like that's not kind. And if there's nothing to worry about, there's nothing to worry about. Look, I think if there's anything that you feel like helps you be more expressive, to feel more seen and heard, then great. I think maybe if you are working something out and it feels safe to do it in that way, just let it unfold. See where it takes you. I think if we can take action without worrying about failing or judging ourselves ahead of time or feeling shame or talking down to us, I mean, the words we use about who we are can be the harshest words we hear from anyone. And so we have to be careful of how we speak of ourselves. And if we can be our own best friend, then we can express everything that we think and feel. We can write it down. We can sing it out. We can act it out. I mean, there's so many wonderful ways that we can express ourselves that I feel like it's completely underutilized in our world, to the number of ways that we can express what's going on inside of our hearts and minds and spirits. And if we could just normalize self-expression without judgment or shame, we would be in a better place.
Yeah. I mean, we're in an epidemic, like the phone use, the cell phones, the internet, the addictions that we have to our devices, where we don't think anymore, and we don't leave that space for creativity, is definitely harming. And I'm watching it also in my own children. On, you know, like, go up and play with your dolls, I tell my daughter. And she's like, no, I'd rather go watch a YouTube video. I'm like, well, that's not you being like, why don't you make your own? Like, you go do your dances, you be expressive. And for them to kind of flip that script, sometimes they don't quite understand. And it's so strange being, you know, growing up with technology. Like, I didn't have technology. I'm, you know, some lady just told me that I look like I was 23. I was like, thank you. I am like double that. Plus one.
And yeah, someone told me that I look 29. And I was like, I'm 41. Thank you so much.
I was like, I'm 47. So it was, you know, growing up and not and knowing what that imagination was, or having that, you know, imaginary friend to talk to or pet rock. The kids now don't understand that, don't understand how to express themselves. What are some things that you can, that you teach to, you know, bring out that expressiveness in a younger generation?
Well, just to be clear, I work mostly with adults. Now, I have worked with children before. They are lovely. I have a great time, but I prefer working with adults.
How about young adults, like in their 20s? Because that is kind of the generation right now that is, that are, the addiction is happening.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's funny because everyone who's in their 20s, they look so young to me. I think they're in high school. But I try to just really listen when I'm speaking to young adults, because I don't think that they're used to being heard. And so I just try to listen and then just ask a lot of questions. And but more specifically, if I was teaching a class, I have, as you know, because you've been in my sessions before, I like to use a lot of prompts. It gives people something to start with so that they don't have to start with nothing, because sometimes that's harder to be more expressive if you have nowhere to start. So start with a prompt and fill in the blank, right? So one of the things I like to ask is, I like the fact that, and then you can share stories with them or content with them and then ask them, okay, I want to hear you, your feedback. So I like the fact that. So when they start with prompts, they get more comfortable speaking in front of their peers in their group. And then it becomes this whole room full of people open to share. Once you get to that level, you've gotten everyone pretty comfortable to where maybe they can open up and share without a prompt. And so it really is about measuring the temperature of the room, how people are feeling, and making sure that you're doing everything you can in support of that group so that you know that you're going to get the best out of them. And it doesn't happen in the first 2 minutes of you. It's earned trust over time. So that's what's important, that I ask people to trust me and that we go on this journey together. And then they start opening up and sharing. And then in the end, no one will stop talking and everyone wants to stay and they don't want to leave. And I have to like turn the lights out, like, okay,
bye,
I'm leaving.
Have you ever had one that fell flat, like a session where like these people were not into it?
Oh my gosh, probably years ago when I was leading the creative group every month, I would think, oh, this is a session that they're going to love. And I would bring in guest speakers and I would, you know, have all types of different topics and thinking, oh, I'm serving them the best I can, best that I possibly can. I've jam packed every minute of this event with, things for them to do. And all people really want to do is talk and connect. And so when I just started to let go of feeling like I had to do all of this stuff, I really just needed to create a space for people to connect. And the way to do that is through vulnerability. And so one of the very best sessions I ever had with that group, and they'll tell you, was when I didn't plan anything. And I was honest about that. I said, I had a really tough month. I didn't plan anything. This is what I'm going through. And they were all like, wow, this is what I'm going through. This is what I'm going through. And then everyone just opened up and shared the hard things they were facing at that point in their life. And they're like, this was the best session we've ever had, because people really just want to feel safe to open up and feel heard. And that's the beginning of healing, when you feel heard and understood, supported. And so I thought, well, that makes my job a lot easier, because then I don't have to plan all this stuff for you guys to do. And they did like all the stuff, but they really value the connection.
The agendaless agenda.
Exactly.
So, and that really speaks to who our audience is. I mean, this is, you know, we've got a lot of event professionals, and our jobs are to create things for people to do to connect. And sometimes it's just not about the things. It's just about the connection and letting people find their own ways. And prompts are always good. And I do remember during pandemic, when we were all virtual and trying to do all this virtual stuff, some of my best connections just came in from, you know, like not knowing who I was going to be talking to, and not knowing, and then people getting comfortable with each other and be like, wow, you did that too. Or I know you're from. So one of my favorite things actually is when I say I'm from New York and there's another New Yorker in the room, and it might happen you're from Texas. Like there might, where? And you just start whittling down where you're from. And if you find someone who like grew up within like 10 miles of you, it's like this, it's like a celebration. You do not know this person, but it's like this celebration of, you get me. Like we are from the same place. I mean, New York's a big place, Texas, California. It's got to be that same thing. Like when people go to countries too. And that was like one of my favorite things, was because you're like, wow, this person gets me. Now we're going to talk about stuff because we feel a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that opening up a room to people to find their connections has been helpful for people to get through something they're dealing with? Because sometimes people don't necessarily know where the connections are at or who to trust. But if it's a, I grew up there, or, hey, that's my name, or whatever that could be, do you give the space for people to find those connections in order to find their voice?
I think so. Yes. Not maybe so obviously, because I think when you're like, hey, everybody, we're going to do icebreakers, you know, people are like, meh, meh. And, you know, facilitating is not something everyone can do well. I have had a unique background of leading groups of people in a way that has developed me and prepared me to be a very effective facilitator. I love to do it. It is a joy. And I try to get people connecting in a more organic way. So I don't make it so obvious, because it's very off-putting when you're like, all right, everyone, this is what you're going to do. And you're going to connect with the person next to you, and you're going to do this, this, and that. It works in the moment. It works. But I feel like the more deep, meaningful, transformational experiences, you're gonna, it's a journey. It's not like, oh, you've connected, all right, bye. It's growing together. It's feeling each step of the way you're leading people to more vulnerability, more closeness, more connection. And so the way I design my curriculums and the way that I facilitate is very intentional for that reason. And my awareness and holding space for groups in the moment, I think, is very tuned in. And so I'm able to notice and act on things in the moment. So that to me is a very important part of facilitating, is just having a high sense of emotional intelligence and awareness to read a room, to read people, and then bring the best out of them that you can. So yeah, I get people connecting. I don't do it in the most obvious way or with the tricks of the trade. If you Googled icebreakers, 10 top ice, I'm not doing those. I think that there's really fun things that we can do with groups. And I know that your audience is event planners, and I go to a lot of events for a lot of different groups. And I do believe that our ability to engage with people is, we're missing out. Event planners, they get a great space. They have great catering. They have music. But beyond that, I feel like there's missed opportunities for people to connect. And I would really love to see more meaningful connections happening with groups. But I think sometimes just getting them together in one room is like, okay, we did that. Check the box. Let's go to the next thing.
I have to say, as a person who plans events, we bring a lot of these things to the table. And unfortunately, the people, and I have written a very in-depth article on my LinkedIn newsletter about how the C-suite or the people who make the decisions are not quite grasping the reason for the event. One of the things that we do at Versatour, which is really important for me, is not just finding a box to have a meeting. It's finding the right feeling of the location, the right design. Does this group fit? Really being intentional about the space and really making it an experience. But a lot of the times I get clients who push back on, you know, that element of creativity or the space for networking that's not forced networking. Because what they think is, yes, we got to tick the box. We got to get our ROI. We got to get this. We got to get this. But when you really go back to those after event surveys and where people felt the best is, I had this amazing connection that just came up and didn't even know it. Or we were so-and-so. Like we talk about this all the time in the events world is like when we go to events, our business deals get done at the bar. Like, honestly, it's never done in the sessions. It's never done on our one-on-one networking that we are forced to do. It's always done like, hey, you know, we're going to the bar for a drink or whatever we do. It's always in those other areas. And I think that creating those spaces for people to have free time or free time to find each other or an activity that people enjoy doing that they are kind of like not forced to do. Like I love giving options. I'm like, here are three options that you can choose from. That could be anywhere from a hike to yoga to skydiving or golf or whatever, but you know, things that people enjoy to bring them together to open up to each other. But yeah,
you're right. And yeah, I talked to a lot of event designers and they say the exact same thing. It's their clients pushing back. It's not that they don't have good ideas because they do. I mean, we could literally do anything in this in Nashville. It's amazing. The talent we have here and the resources we have here. But you're right. You get a lot of pushback because they're either trying to save money or, but what blows me away is they're trying to save money on the things that I think really matter.
Yep. Well, unfortunately, and the other things,
it's like, oh, we'll spend $1.5 million on this person who sings music to perform for you. And it's great. Oh, that's a great experience. But I don't know. Does it move the needle with the people?
Yeah, I do know that, you know, costs increase. You know, a lot of times I talk about all the time, hey, is that projector really worth $3,000 a day? You know, and that really takes out of the budget. And I think that, you know, that's a huge conversation that we're having in the events world of we're taking away from the things that we need, which is the space to connect, to workshop. I mean, we don't workshop anymore. Hands on, like what you do, Beth. So we're going to wrap up a little, you know, in a little while. But one thing I want to do is give you the space to, you know, tell people about you and, you know, why what you do is important for people to bring to the table, whether that is a one-on-one with you in a sense, you know, just you've helped me just being able in your calm voice. We actually spent an afternoon together at her pool, at her place where she lives, took my kids, and she like talked to me and worked me through things, like questions, just asking questions. And I think that having that, you know, person who understands emotional intelligence and mindset and the science of your brain is very important. But, you know, when you talk to groups, breakouts, companies as a whole, keynote speaking, what are the things that you believe that you bring to the table to inspire people to use their creativity and imagination to bring up and the ROI on that? I think that's what everyone wants. It's like, what's my return on investment if Beth English walks in the room?
Ta-da! great questions. I had something prepared to say and then ta-da came out and then my brain went
and away. That's so amazing.
I think I bring real life experience to the table. I didn't just learn these things and then I share what I learned. You know, you can't find what I know on Google because I lived it myself and I know all the nuances around mental health and mindset and emotional intelligence and creativity. These are all things that I have spent years and thousands of hours working out in my own life. And so I have a unique perspective from lived experience. And I think that is truly valuable. And I have the education and professionalism to communicate it clearly to groups who maybe are not familiar with it, or maybe they are a little bit, but I expand their perspective and I shift perspectives into a place where people feel opportunity, you know, possibility, all of those things. And so for the return on investment, I would encourage people who make the decisions on who to bring in to train your people to imagine what would a well-adjusted, happy, thoughtful, creative person who loves collaborating, what would they bring to a team, to as a leader or even just someone who helps on a committee? Or I mean, you're going to get the best out of your people when they are their best. Mm-hmm. And many of us are not doing our best right now. And so we can't turn a blind eye to the things that people are working through, whether that's childhood trauma or the loss of a parent or taking care of an elderly parent or raising children. There are so many emotional milestones that we go through in our lives that make everything else around us seem muddy and dull and flat. Like, we need to be able to work through the difficult things in our life in a way that feel like we're growing into a place where we can thrive. If we don't have a pathway to grow into a place where we thrive, then we're not going to be putting out our best work. We're not going to be making and building relationships with people we work with that feel fruitful. I mean, the proof is in the fruit, right? And so if you don't have the fruit, then you need to work on yourself. And then you'll start to see it. And I think it's important that, I mean, case study after case study after case study. When you take care of your people will take care of you. It is that simple. Mm-hmm. And so I just love taking care of people, especially those who, you know, are leaders who want to build community, build teams, build something to make impact. And so that's what I love doing, giving people that vision for themselves, because maybe they can see the vision in me and how it's played out. And, that resonates. It definitely resonates.
Yeah, it's very important to have your vision, your milestone, your focus, and keep your emotions in check. You know, it's understanding how you're feeling, checking in and being like, that's okay. But how do I work on that to not, you know, to not have negative or fear-based emotions? And I think that for me, it's, I have post-its that I have in little cards that I go through every day, like my milestones, like I'm going to do this. And when I do it, I write it down. I have my post-its in front of me that I literally says, it says, I'm proud of myself. Mm-hmm. I am the boss. And then I have one that has five words on it. It says freedom, inspiration, empowerment, gratitude, and passion. Mm-hmm. That is what is in front of me at all times. I also have a growth mindset chart in front of me and also something that says, given a tiara and a nice cape, I could rule the world. So I definitely feel, you know, if I can do these things, I will be confident in myself. But there are days, you know, when you're not feeling so great or something happens, and being able to pull yourself out, but also that affects teams and being able to kind of come together as a team and also be vulnerable. I love that. One of the biggest parts, I'm not going to spoil it. I think everyone should hire you. So one of the biggest parts of your keynote, though, is that vulnerability and your story that you tell people and how you got yourself through it and still working on it. It's a journey every day. And a lot of us still go through that with, you know, traumas that we've had. And I do think that, you know, it's always just a work in progress. And I love what you do. Everyone can, so Beth English is spelt with an I, not an E. That's another funny story she has if you ever connect with her about her boyfriend. If you're going to look for Beth to find out more about her, it's bethenglish.com with an I. She also does a monthly, like, relax, reset during lunch that I did the other day, which was so helpful. And even if you are feeling in a good space, like, it just made you feel even better. Like, mine was hopeful. Like, she was asking people, like, I feel like crap. And I'm like, no, I'm actually feeling pretty hopeful today, you know? And I think that that's okay, too, for you to celebrate that, hey, I'm in a good space right now, but I'm still going to attend and be in this moment. So for closing remarks, Beth, what else would you love to tell people about you, about what you do, about how they can help themselves? Anything you had left on your mind?
I just feel like we could take this time to encourage everyone who's listening to know that wherever you are in your process, someone has been there before. So you're never truly alone in anything that you go through. So just know that, because sometimes we do. We feel like we're so alone in things, and we're not. We've got each other always. And that whatever wisdom that we need is within us. So if we just listen to our discernment and our intuition, navigate that with curiosity, that we'll always find a way through. And that we have everything we need, that we are already enough to do all the things that we are already doing. So just keep believing in yourself, even when it's tough. Because if you don't believe in you, it's harder for other people to believe in you.
Absolutely. And so
you got to show your light and shine it bright and know that you're not alone, because we're all here to help each other shine, you know, our lights even brighter. And I think Debbie and I have both been that for each other, and I'm grateful for that. And we would have never known that had we not gotten vulnerable and with each other and shared what was truly going on in our lives. And so there's so much bravery and courage in our weakness.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's not a bad place to be. It feels bad, but it's just
yep, absolutely. Life is a roller coaster, and we're all just trying to get through and, you know, be true to yourself. Beth, thank you so much for being our guest. I love that you've got so much insight and what you can bring to people with what you do through creativity and imagination. And this was just the perfect segment for you to be on. So thank you so much. All right. Thanks so much.